Welcome to the Chelsea Skidmore Show. I am here today with my husband, friend, partner, comedian, Stephen Randolph. Hello, Stephen.
Hello, Chelsea.
How are you?
I'm doing really good. Our dog's tearing stuff up, and I could hear him, but that's okay.
We're having a nice little Saturday.
Mm-hmm. Is it Saturday?
I know. It's like what every day is like, what day is it, right?
Yeah, it's just a blur.
My athlete's foot is acting up. What's with me and athlete's foot?
You're an athlete.
Dude, it's this guy. I know it's from these nail salons that I go to. I know what it's from. If I say that, does it make it any less disgusting? But in between my pinky toe and the other toe, it is itching so much. And I just know.
You should spray your spray.
I got a spray. I have a spray, Lomitrin or whatever it's called.
Mm-hmm.
Over-the-counter spray.
Tenactin.
I got to put it on my little pups.
Mm-hmm.
My little puppy toes.
Got the cutest feet in the world.
Thank you.
The prettiest feet I've ever
and
seen.
And you're a foot guy.
Yeah.
So when you saw that your wife had cute little feet, were you lucked out? Like what?
I noticed them when we were friends.
You noticed them when we were friends?
Yeah.
But if I didn't have good feet, would that have been a make or break?
It would have been tough to get over.
Have you ever gone out with a girl that you liked and then you noticed her feet and you're like, I can't do it.
Yeah.
Really? Mm-hmm. It's kind of like that Seinfeld episode with the big hands.
Yeah, I remember that. That was funny.
So you were just over her after seeing her feet?
Yeah. She was very attractive. And my friends were like, dude, you're so cool around her. You just don't give a shit. And I was just like, I'm not into the feet.
Because you knew her secret.
I was like a kid, though. Yeah.
Even as a kid, you had standards?
Mm-hmm.
How old?
I think I was like 20.
Because I feel like, you know, between 16 and 25, you're just grateful to be getting with any chick.
Yeah, but not dating is different.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
What were other make or breaks for you when you were dating girls that made you want to end the relationship?
I don't know. I'm trying to think. Like, I've grown a lot, so it's hard to tap into that old guy. Let me think. Well, like, when I got sober, pot was, like, a turn off, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I see, when I was single, like, if a girl would, like, eat fast food, it would just kind of be a bummer.
Was that in sobriety?
Yeah. When I got sober and someone would be like at McDonald's, like I would just note that. I'd be like, huh. You know,
yeah.
Like, oh, just driving through the drive thru for some Del Taco. Like, okay.
Yeah.
That's like worse to me than if they were doing something else. Like,
that's someone without a spiritual program.
Yeah. It was just like shocking. It's just like at a, you know, everybody likes like, I don't know, taco trucks are different. Like, but just like straight up like chain fast food. Like, it's kind of like concerning a little bit. Chick-fil-A. That's the only fast food I like. Chick-fil-A and In-N-Out.
I think a lot of people don't understand that. It has to do with sobriety because before I was sober, I would always eat, you know, I ate all at every fast food chain, you know? And once I got sober, hold on.
Dude, this bulldog, I'll go while Chelsea's grabbing him. Chelsea doesn't like to put him in his little doggy cage, and it's just necessary sometimes. I think we should put him in the cage. He's the cutest dog, but
everyone
he knows
gets
it.
Mad when we say cage, we're supposed to say crate.
Well, it's a fucking cage. Here, and
he's jumping on the podcast stuff.
Oh my God, he's such a naughty little boy. I'll finish the thought. Here, give him the Gumby.
No.
Before I got sober, I ate every fast food, you know, chain. I loved McDonald's chicken nuggets. I loved their French fries, you know, but once I got sober, I truly could not put a morsel of fast food past these lips.
I know. My favorite was Jack in the Box. It was a sourdough Jack with two tacos and a Dr. Pepper. And I noticed that was a common order. Other people got that. They're called the surfer combo. I wasn't a surfer, but my friend Greg and Steve would be like, oh, that's the surfer combo. It's just like a normal combo that people just gravitate towards.
I think when you're hungover, you're so used to feeling like shit, you don't even notice how shitty fast food makes you feel. Like, you probably can't pinpoint what's causing the problem in your body.
Yeah. It's crazy. The first time I had Jack in the Box or in McDonald's in the last 12 years, Brody's manager, Dave Rath, after Brody passed, there was like a memorial, and he bought like two huge bags of McDonald's hamburgers. And I was starving, and I was like, there's no way I'm going to eat one of these. I don't eat McDonald's. And I had two cheeseburgers, and they were delicious. But I just can't get myself to go to a McDonald's. I just don't think I would do that.
The thing that I'm annoyed about is that when we had fast food growing up, it didn't have the hormones that, like, tweens get today. So it's like there's, like, a whole, like, have you heard the whole thing about, like, fast food makes, like, girls' boobs grow and stuff?
Do you think that's real?
I don't know. I've heard people talk about that. And I was like, damn, we got the old McDonald's. We didn't get that. I always, I've told you this before. One time at McDonald's, I got a Happy Meal as a kid. And for some reason, the VHS for Dances with Wolves was in my Happy Meal.
A little inappropriate.
Who put that in there?
Second time that movie's come up in the last 24 hours.
What?
It was when we were picking a movie last night. I saw Dances with Wolves as an option. It was a great movie. It changed my life.
It changed your life?
Yes, it changed my life. I was young when I watched it. It was like heavy. It was...
How did Dances with Wolves change your life? No, I never did.
Then you would not know.
Can you give me the cliff notes of how it changed your life?
Okay. And Brett Banta, who's also a comic friend of ours, we both talked about this. There's one scene where one of the older settlers had a bunch of mules in the Native American Indians. I think they were the Pawnee tribe. They were killing him. And as they were shooting him with arrows in the gut, his dying words were, "Please take good care of my mules. Please take good care of my mules." And that just made me cry and just die inside.
Aww.
One of
those
crazy things. He was worried about his mules being... He's like, "Please take good care of my mules." I was just like, fuck me up.
And how did that change your life?
I just thought how selfless. He was worried about his mules being treated well as he was getting shot by arrows. I would just be screaming.
Aww.
I'd be like, "No!" Like, I just thought that was so crazy.
I broke up with a guy because he had a spike belt mm-hmm. and a chain wallet.
Yeah.
And his style, just his accessories,
yeah,
bothered me so much. And there was also something else he would do. I don't know what else it was, but we were breaking up, and I think maybe he's boring too. And then I was like, "And I don't like your chain wallet and your spike belt." And then he goes, "Oh, really? Because I don't see you wearing anything that dope."
That's
in that voice. And like that, like, phrase is just stuck in my memory. "Oh, really? I don't see you wearing anything that dope."
That's so 90s.
And I was like, I was blown away.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I also punched him in the face. And I don't want to scare you, but he called my mom dumb. He said, "Your mom's an idiot," and I was drunk. Wow. Well, I didn't punch him. I slapped him.
Wow.
I know. Wow. I know. It's I know what you're thinking right now. You're going to add that to your little mental checklist of past dating offenses.
Yeah, just keeping tabs. just observing.
Yeah. Any other funny breakups?
I'm just trying to think.
You know, that was the only breakup I ever did. Post that, I had never broken up with someone before, except when I left Hawaii. But, like, I was always the one who I feel like was more dumped. Mm. I've been dumped more than I've dumped. Mm. What about you?
50-50. I was a junkie for most of my life, and I didn't really, like, I moved on quickly. Like, you know, I'd just be like, "Oh, whatever."
I think guys care so much less than girls, though.
Yeah, it still hurts, but then, like, you're just kind of like, I don't know, you're just kind of on to the next one, you know?
Is it true that guys don't feel breakups until a couple months later, and then they start to miss the girl?
My buddy Bill Posley said it best. He said the guys get over it really quickly, mm-hmm. and are that guys don't feel it initially, and that girls do, but mm-hmm. girls get over it long-term quicker, and guys, like, then, like, hold on to it later, you know?
They do hold on to it, and then they're like, "I was in love with her," right?
I would, like, do coke and look at old prom pictures and stuff and be like, "What did I ever do?"
You know? You, like, mean, like, how did you fuck that up?
Yeah, like, what? Oh, my God. You know? But
that's,
like,
so funny. Yeah. When I got asked to prom, it was, like, in the hallway, and there was a bunch of, you know, kids around, and this guy comes up to me and he goes, "Hey, Chelsea, we're going to prom, right?" And I was like, "Wait, what?" And he was like this like really like kooky kind of guy. He was like, "Hey, come to my parents' hot tub." Like, he was always in his dad's hot tub.
Cool.
Yeah, but like, I didn't want to go to prom with him. Yeah. You know, like, he was a friend. I actually blocked him
recently.
Within the past 5 years.
Wow.
Just because I felt like he was like drunk all the time and sending me these like weird messages, and I'm like, dude, I don't even fucking know you anymore.
Yeah.
But it was like some weird, it was some crazy weird shit. I've had that with a couple guys from my high school, of them just like sending me all these bizarre texts.
I had a guy mentally snap and target me for over the last 10 years on Facebook with different accounts, like threatening to kill me and stuff. And
oh yeah.
Oh yeah. I was like, oh wow.
So this guy just comes up and he goes, "Hey, we're going to the prom, right?" And I was like, and I remember I looked at a guy who I kind of liked, and I was like, damn, I want to go with him, you know? So then I just had to go with him.
Yeah.
And I was just like, why? It's like, but you think of prom and it's like, you want to go with like someone special. Like, yeah. Did you go to prom with the girl that you wanted? Mm-hmm. And what was the way that you asked her, if there was a fun way? Or is that something that kind of happened later?
I went to like a bunch of dances and a bunch of proms, and I went with probably 50% with people that I wanted to, and 50% just like, oh, whatever, let's just do this. So my high school girlfriend broke up with me like senior year, and then I went to prom with somebody else. And my own prom with somebody else. She went with some other guy. My friends happened to be at that dance and like told me she was making out with the guy the entire time. And I was just like, what the like, why would they even say that? And I forgot who I went to prom with. I forgot even who I went to prom with, but I remember this poor girl. I hope she's doing well, but I won't say her name, but we were all I think about it every single time I pass there on the 10, the Museum of Flight. There's a Museum of Flight. It's a cool, like, airplane museum in Santa Monica. And it was, like, where a lot of proms would be, like, in the Los Angeles area, because it was just this cool venue. And so in my friend group was this girl. We were all on meth, and we went to prom on Friday night. And we were all just, like, just out of our fucking minds on I have two funny prom stories on meth, and you know, no, whatever, we were like 16 or 17, and then I went home and like came down or whatever, and then at another school, one of my friends at another school brought this same girl to the next night's prom at the same place, and she was still up doing speed, and he goes, dude, look at our prom pictures. And she just had eyes like saucers. They were just like I wish he could, you know, the person, I don't want to say, but I wish that I need to see that picture. I think about that every time I pass there. I think of that picture because she went to two back-to-back proms without sleeping. It was the most
Oh my God.
The most whacked out prom picture. It was like,
who's like that in high school?
Yeah, we were. She was wild. This girl would sneak into my windows at night and like really, really crazy. But yeah, she was.
She'd pull Clarissa Explains It All.
Is that what she did? We go through windows?
Well, there was like a neighbor who always crawled in, like up a ladder into the window.
And she was friends with my girlfriend. And so every time we broke up, she would just climb in my window, you know, like.
Whoa.
Yeah.
And hook up?
Yeah.
Kind of
crazy. But there's a whole longer story with her. But I just don't want to tell those kind of stories. But then one other prom that I went to, I went with a friend from, I never hooked up with her. I'm just still friends on Facebook. A girl from like.
Who the fuck is she? No, I'm just kidding.
But we were just buddies and stuff. And so she asked me to her prom. And we went to kindergarten through eighth grade together. So we were really close. I went to like Catholic school. So it was the same people for like 9 years. And we had this really cool, like bad boy, hot, like British limo driver. And he was driving, you know how you go in like a limo or whatever. And he was driving in a limo. And after prom, he's like, all right, mates, what do you want to do? You know, I'm at your service. And then we're like, oh, we don't know. And he's like, do you want to go to a Hollywood Hills party, a really crazy party? And we're like, yeah. So we're all 16 years old. This British guy takes us up to Hollywood Hills, and he's like, bunch of crazy mates out here in England. I never forget it. I walk in and this guy with, like, he looked like an Ultimate Fighter, like this British dude, was smashing another guy into the window. And there was like this movie, this cool artsy movie being played, and everybody there was like 28 to like 35. And he was like, he's only been in the country for 2 days. This isn't a way to come to America. And we were just at this party doing drugs with all these like 29, 30 year olds, and our limo driver took us. It was so fucking fun. I couldn't believe we were at this party. Like,
that is fun. I remember we had a party bus mm-hmm. like limo, and the driver just pulled over on the side of the street, and we were like stopped for a long time. He was below the bus sleeping.
Whoa.
And underneath the bus, and the cops came, and like it was like a whole thing.
Oh my God.
And he got in trouble. I think like someone had to come and like drive us home.
That's crazy.
It was bizarre.
That's so weird.
Yeah, I went 5 times.
Did you?
Yeah. I went, the prom I went to in Switzerland, we were all, there was all you can drink champagne, mm-hmm. and all the kids were grinding. I grinded with the, with like the headmaster.
That's
like
so
all,
crazy.
It was very weird. I remember it being so weird. The students and the teachers.
How it is in Europe? Is it just like lighter? Like,
I don't know. I have no idea. I mean, I just thought it was so weird. Like, there were these teachers who lived on the property of our boarding school. You know, it was like a really big campus. And I remember like they invite, like these two teachers invited me and like these two other girls over, and we drank wine and we're like hanging out with them like on a school. And I was just like, why are we like, I think I was like, why? Don't you guys think this is weird that we're like going over here? They didn't do anything weird, but like it's fucking weird to me.
Yeah, like at my age, if I was to do that, that would be
weird. That's weird.
Yeah, maybe it's just European. I don't know the culture.
We're all American.
The teachers too?
Yes, these ones were, I think.
Oh.
It was just odd.
It's a little odd.
I know. I love our relationship because all the stuff that we just talked about is stuff that in other relationships I would be so jealous, and like I'd be like overthinking it. And like, yeah, we did just talk about prom, so it actually wasn't bad because like high school is just high school. Mm-hmm. But just like in general, that, you know, that we can have these open conversations with each other, I love it.
Yeah, I don't like hiding anything. It's just tiring. Like, I don't want to have to be in a relationship where I have to hide anything.
I think it's like when you're married too, it's like you're married, like you're fucking married, mm-hmm. like you're key and lock, you know?
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're enjoying some television shows together.
Yeah.
The Undoing. We are up to date. The last episode is on Sunday. And, who are we thinking is the murderer?
The grandfather and the blonde friend who's the attorney, for sure.
Together.
Mm-hmm.
And let's give your beliefs as to why. And one quick second, my love. Mm-hmm. We're talking about The Undoing on HBO, starring Nicole Kidman and Hugh Grant. Please continue.
Yeah, and I am picking apart Hugh Grant's acting. It's like this, that I'm obsessed with him not making eye contact with anybody until the last line. And I know it's a character choice. He's been very successful doing it, so... You know, I that's a great career. So it's nothing, you know, and he's a good actor, but it's just a weird tick that I can't get over.
He's so charming and looking away and being coy and bashful, and then he looks at you to make the point and punch.
It's like when you figure out a comedian, it's like da 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 da.
It's like a cadence.
Oh, this isn't coming from the heart. This is a manufactured ba 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 ba. But I don't know. Whenever I could see an art that something's manufactured, if something's duplicated, I lose respect for it.
Respect or interest?
Both. He keeps me interested. I'm like, okay, what's he doing? But like,
But you lost patterns, respect for Hugh Grant?
No. Yeah. When I saw that, it pulled me out of it.
Uh-huh.
Like Brad Pitt's eating.
Mm-hmm.
Always eating.
A quirk. I think they all have a quirk. Well, you know, and do you know who Kristen Stewart is?
I've heard the name.
She's always like biting her nails and like looking like dark and stuff.
Maybe I have quirks. Maybe people would pick my stuff apart. But it just like, I get like, I get that from my mom. Like she would be like, the guy blinks too much. And it's like, oh, that's done for me now.
You
know? But yeah, I like, whenever I see like patterns, I'm like, oh, they're just doing a template. I don't like that. But
I loved what you said when you thought it was a grandfather, because you said rich white men are always concerned with legacy.
They're obsessed with their legacy.
That's so funny.
They have everything else. They've won, quote unquote, on in this planet. And they're like, well, I need to leave a lasting legacy. Like, they are obsessed with their legacy.
Yeah.
You know? Old rich white men are obsessed with their legacies. But he's the only one with, like, he has the bankroll to do something bad. He's used to getting his way. He didn't like him from the start. He's cheating. He has a kid somewhere else. Men like that find out information everywhere. So if he's already going to, like, if he has the power to go to school and bully them, like, that shows that he's not afraid to go to the source and fucking bully. And so what's a better way to bully than to kill somebody, you know? And then also I noticed right away that there's red flags. I noticed her best friend kept information from her. So when she met, she represented her husband. Yes, as a lawyer, you can't say who you're representing, but that's a pretty big...
I mean, it's weird. If someone came to you and it'd be like they were co-conspiring.
I would say it's a conflict of interest. If someone said, hey, like, if I asked your sponsor to, you know, who's an attorney to represent me, please don't tell Chelsea. She probably wouldn't.
It's crazy, especially like even if it's a friend.
That's what I'm saying.
You know, like
it's a conflict of interest.
It's insanity that she would just keep that from her.
Keep a number one, knowing that he cheated, that he's getting kicked out of the hospital for that. She kept that from her. Red flag number one. The way that the grandfather loves her so much, and then her crazy wave in the courtroom was like that was very unprofessional, and that was that. Those were all red flags. Mm. That it's her in the grandfather to me.
Yeah, I'm excited to see. It was such a great show. Such a great show. I really enjoyed it. And
you looking at the thing is distracting me, but
I was looking because mine was jumping because yeah. I'm louder than you.
No,
I'm a loud person.
You've noticed that.
Yes, I'm loud. I'm a loud girl.
It reminds me of something I just realized. I saw if somebody's
keep going.
Well, it's hard. I'm in a conversation with you. You're fixated on a tool.
Because I'm adjusting.
No, I know. If somebody is... It's hard to connect.
It's nothing to do with connection. It was jumping.
No, I know.
And you know how sometimes it gets messed up where the levels...
Yeah.
We're talking about the podcast levels right now. It was falling down and mine was jumping and yours disappeared. So yeah. I was just adjusting it and
no,
waiting
I know.
For you to start talking.
I know. I'm just sharing. Like, it just... I get thrown off.
Yeah, I hear you. Okay. I think it's all set now.
When people... If someone's, like, trying to dominate you in a conversation, it says to keep looking at their foreheads. And it'll throw them off and they'll lose track on this one video
I
just watched.
That's great. I love
You're
that.
You're just like that. If someone's trying to like bully you or like, you know, you just keep looking at their forehead and it throws their power off.
Because it looks like they're looking right through you.
It's just like, oh,
that's a good tip.
I know. I saw that.
Well, I'm excited to see who the murderer is.
Me too.
It's a great show. There's a lot of great shows. I'm enjoying A Teacher right now on Hulu, which is an FX show about the teacher having an affair with one of her students. Me and all my girlfriends are loving it.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, I always like had that teacher student fantasy, I think. So like, and this is like a role reversal, you know, I'm not into younger guys. And of course, like if I was a teacher, I would never like want to hook up with a young student. I think that's obviously disgusting. The point of the show is really about abuse of power, and they make that clear, you know, and they're very careful with like the lines of the show and what they really want this to be and about.
They have to add that in afterwards, you know. It's someone's fantasy, and then they're like, oh,
I saw like a little thing with the writer director, and what she was kind of talking about is, of course, we see all of these articles about teachers, but this is kind of like about the aftermath, you know, and like what happens and how it destroys people's lives and stuff. It's good. It's good TV. There's been some good TV coming through. We're also loving The Real Housewives of Salt Lake City. I think I've seen 3 episodes so far.
Mm-hmm.
We cried. I've never cried in an episode of The Real Housewives.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell us what made
us cry? Yeah, when the preacher brought... one of her other castmates' father, who was like 64 or something and struggling with addiction, lost everything to her church, which is like a Baptist church, which is not a normal thing in Utah because it's predominantly Mormon.
And so he went and as like a Mormon, like went to their church and she prayed over him and he started crying and everybody started crying. I started crying.
We both grabbed each other's hands so tightly and had tears in our eyes.
Yeah, it was powerful.
It was so moving.
And she's a kooky lady. So
very
like,
kooky.
But she's like serious about, I think she's serious about her church.
Yeah.
You know?
It's interesting to kind of see inside those churches and to see, you know, certain priests or priestesses.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the word?
Priest. I
just
think it's
to
still
see
priest.
People preaching and how affected that the audience or the churchgoers get. Is there another term for them?
No, congregation. Yeah.
To see how emotional and moved they get mm-hmm. is so... interesting to watch.
Me too.
It's
I'm
really
fascinated
cool.
by
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it's very cool. Like so many people were like brought to tears and like just people getting so moved. It's like it's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
I love
it.
It
is. Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I never had that. I never had like a connection with a church. You know, we briefly went to like a Presbyterian church on like holidays and then we kind of just stopped when I was growing up. But we never had like an actual religion or church. Like we celebrate all of the Christian holidays, but that's it. You know,
mm-hmm. I grew up Catholic school throughout. And, you know, it was the priests that we had were just so stale and they would just read like this. And it was just a bore. It was just an absolute bore. And like seeing Jesus on a cross, it was just all very shocking. And you know, when I do have hard times, I will step into a Catholic church and pray. And there's something like I feel there. But like I would go, you know, I have a lot of my cousins went off and they did like their Christian thing, which is different than just Catholic. And their preachers were like normal people mm-hmm. and they were like, you know, enthusiastic and like bringing their best. And I just... Yeah, we never had that at our churches. It was just I literally would like be nodding out so tired and bored. And so, yeah, I have church background, but not interesting church background. I'm really a big fan of Joel Osteen. I know a lot of people think he's a fraud or he's making a lot of money. So it's kind of like, but he says it's all from his books. But I'm touched by him. I'm touched by his sermons.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. I just saw this article about this priest from Hillsong, which is a church in New York. And I think they have one out here as well. And I remember hearing about it because when I would go to 12-step meetings in New York, a friend of mine used to go to it and they described it as like the rock and roll church. I think that's mm-hmm. this church. And it's like a church that had all good looking people, all celebrities. Like it was like the it church kind mm-hmm. of thing, like the cool church. And then an article just came out last week that the head guy was caught having an affair and had to like quit and step down and stuff.
Recently.
It was like a whole big deal. Yeah.
So after
I find
watching
that stuff to be interesting.
After watching Nexium and, you know, having my own experience with in 12 step kind of giving like somebody all my power and being like, what should I do? I'm very, very skeptical of anybody that is any church leader or any kind of that. And I would love to be a motivational speaker. You know, I would mm-hmm. really, I would love to do that. But like, I'm just very cautious mm-hmm. of like, that person doesn't have any more power than you do. You know, they're just kind of like sharing their wisdom and they may have a gift of being like motivated and putting words together correctly. But you know, I'm coming to terms with that and very watching the Nexium thing and watching that whole, like, I'm just very skeptical of, like, giving, or not skeptical, I'm very cautious of not giving my power to somebody that has a good message.
Yeah, I think the phrase giving the power is, like, the big one because, like, I think, you know, whether it's, like, a cult or a leader, like, any one specific person who people are starting to follow and kind of, like, you know, put on a pedestal, I think that's when it gets dangerous. I had, you know, the cult expert Rick Allen Ross on a couple episodes ago, and that's kind of what his definition was for a cult. Like, if there's any one person who everyone is kind of following after... Mm-hmm. and they're having a great influence on everyone in a harmful way,
mm-hmm.
then that's kind of what that is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm very cautious of that stuff.
Any particular reason why or...
I just it has the possibility to hurt so many people, mm-hmm. you know, and you know, I just know I'm a really good speaker. Like, I have no fear going and speaking. I would speak at Dodger Stadium tomorrow on something I knew about and would be very motivated. But, like, I still have a lot of issues to work out. So I'm just, like, anytime somebody's charismatic and well-spoken, like, it seems like God gives, like, that gift and also, like, it also, like, it, I don't know, it, like... If you speak too much and you're in the public speaking too much, it's really easy to get lazy with your own morals.
Because
you forget, like, that you're just another person and that you have to, like, you know what I mean? Like, I would be at 12-step meetings and I would speak and I would have the whole room laughing and then I would go to my car and want to kill myself. You know? And I'd be like, everybody like, oh my God, that was such a good message. But I was like, yeah. But like, I'm like really depressed right now and I fucking want to die. And like, I don't know, like, look at Robin Williams, look at Chris mm-hmm. Farley, like anybody who's out in the center, like generating energy and doing that stuff, like Brody be so depressed, you know, like, or like, you know, have issues. And I'm just very, I've just had so much experience with people that I thought were very, very funny and very charismatic, just like, kill themselves or, you know, like have a secret dark life. And so it's just, it's, I don't know what that is, but like whenever
I think you're talking about detaching the performance from the person or the art from the person.
But yeah, but I'm also art, but then also mega church leaders. And, mm-hmm. you know, I follow all these people. I follow, like, it's a passion of mine. I follow like motivational speakers and mega church people. And I'm very interested in that whole thing, but they get in trouble a lot, you know? And I don't know if that's because they're just a normal person. And when they get in trouble, it makes news. Whereas when a normal person gets in trouble or does something bad, it's not big news, but
I think there's a message in being careful about who you trust in general. Like, people are not always what they seem. Don't meet your hero, sort of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I had a crazy experience that I think I might have touched on at some point in a podcast, but I was at a 12-step meeting. I heard a speaker who I thought was,
oh, I remember that,
fantastic. And I wanted her to sponsor me. And she had me drive out to where she lived. I think it was in Reseda. And, you know, I drove for like 45 minutes. It was out in the middle of nowhere. And she had told me that her husband was in porn, maybe. Someone was in porn. Not her, but like her husband was or something. Mm-hmm. And I immediately remember my gut telling me, that's fucking weird. How could this person who was such an incredible speaker, such an example of the program, who carried herself so well, has had so many life lessons, you know, and has so much to speak on. How could she be living a sober life in a relationship with someone who is in porn? How does that work? Mm-hmm. You know? And I ignored that. I drove out to see her. And when I got there, there was a big bus parked on the property. And she goes, we can do the step work in here. You know, I was going out there to do some...
the bang bus.
12-step step work with her. Exactly, the bang bus. And then I go, oh, is this where you guys film porn? And she goes... And she was like, yeah. I was like, oh. And then she was like, well, they're actually filming at our house today. They also use my house to film porn shoots on and use it as a location. And I was like, oh. And then she was like, yeah, they're filming right now. If you're comfortable, we can just go outside, mm-hmm. you know, and sit outside. Because it was a super hot day, too, in the valley. And we didn't want to go on the bus without AC mm-hmm. and, like, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, yeah, I could go outside. And, like... There was like this part in me that was like, what the fuck are we walking mm-hmm. into? But then there was like this other part of me that wants to act like I'm so cool with everything. Like, I got it. No worries. No big deal. Like, mm-hmm. I'm a tough person. I've been around. And we walk inside and they're doing stills. Like, they're it's a photographer who is shooting a girl and it's no big deal. Like, she's in a sexy outfit, but like, it's nothing insane. Mm-hmm. So we go outside and we're sitting out there, and this woman, her eyes were like rolling back in her head. She wasn't the person that I saw speaking at the meeting.
That's what I'm talking about.
The setting was completely different. I think she was high on pills. I think she was lying. Everybody, there was such a big line of people to meet her when she spoke, you know? And I don't think it was real. I think she was fucking high. And I, you know, I don't want to bring this up and say that this could happen anywhere. Mm-hmm. The fact that it happened in a meeting is just, it just happened in a meeting.
No, but a charismatic person who had a good pitch down.
But that was exactly.
I'm cautious of that.
So we're sitting outside and then the director comes out and they keep asking us to adjust where we're sitting because we're in the shot. And at this point we hear her fucking. And I went in to use the bathroom and it sounded like a really aggressive scene, you know, probably like a gagging scene or like an anal scene. It just sounded gnarly. And I left and I came home. I had a panic attack and I ended up going to the ER because I was so anxious. My arms wouldn't stop tingling. You know, that was kind of like a hypochondriac. I didn't connect the two at first. I thought there was something wrong with me because this was a couple of months after I was in a really bad car accident and my car was totaled and I was worried it was like a nerve thing. And then when I found out it was just a panic attack, I hadn't connected the fact that that was so traumatizing to be. I thought I was going over to this person's house who was an incredible speaker and a great example of the program that I'm in. Mm-hmm. Yet she was someone who was a complete fraud. Mm-hmm. And was doing a porn shoot with her eyes rolling back in her. I mean, like, it was disturbing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why when I help people in 12 step, I'm always like very cautious with like sponsees and stuff to be like, look, dude, I don't have the answer. I'm just a guy. Like, this is what worked for me. Like, I don't even want that responsibility, you know?
Totally.
You know,
you wanted to get into some of these questions?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So, and we'll answer them together. And then if you want to take it out into like another direction, you know, and you're inspired, go ahead. First question, what is your favorite role play and does it ever get funny in bed? And it's so funny because Bonnie said this. What is your favorite role play? Does it ever get funny in bed? And this is an Instagram Q&A. I'm sorry, I forgot to preface that.
Probably like that, like I'm an older like guy and you're like, you know, you're just like coming over and you know, you're like, hi, Mr. Randolph, like that whole thing.
We've done the neighbor thing.
Yeah, the neighbor thing, like stranger thing, like I can't believe this is happening thing. That is funny. And I don't like a lot of giggling in bed.
And you
do bits.
I don't mean to. I'm shy.
I know. And Red Band said something one time. He was like, you don't like bits. He was just like drunk or something. I don't know why. He's like, you don't like bits in bed, huh? I'm like, out of nowhere. He like channeled
that's
the
so
truth.
Odd.
Like, it was so odd. And I'm like, yes, Chelsea does them. And he's like, he just shook his head. And I don't. I just like, it's for some reason, it's just like, there could be fun, funny moments. But it's like as a guy, you're like trying to do, you know, usually as a guy, you're like doing more of the work. So it just like pulls focus. It's like.
Yeah, I definitely have like a habit of doing bits in bed and like trying to make it funny and make jokes. You know, I can't help it. I think it is just me and I would love for you to love me.
I love you.
As who I am and accept me for who I am. And
I accept
like,
you. I keep fucking.
You know, and I think part of it, you know, is like being shy, being nervous.
Really?
Yeah. Being shy, being nervous. Not that I'm shy in front of you, but I think sex is like very vulnerable. You know, so I think I probably want to distract or deflect or something because, you know, maybe because I'm feeling uncomfortable in the moment. Nothing to do with you mm-hmm. or anything specifically, but like, mm-hmm. I think sometimes it's just easy for me to ease in that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and I'm dead serious.
You're just too serious, babe. No. Yeah. And for the role play, I know I've like walked out and walked back in and pretended I was like a neighbor. I think the neighbor thing is what we've done. I'm a neighbor in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
And I snuck over.
Yeah. I like that.
I like that one too. You still have to pick me up on the side of the road as a hitchhiker.
I know. We'll probably at this point of our marriage just go end up getting something to eat and fall asleep.
Totally. Okay, next question. Historical period you would love to travel to?
1920s Hollywood, without even thinking.
Wow.
Without even thinking.
1920s Hollywood.
Yes.
That would be fun.
One of my friends bought the first studio, Max Sennett Studio, in Silver Lake. And I was having coffee with him, and I knew that he did other businesses. And I was like, oh, did you happen to be in Silver Lake? He's like, cool guy, really good friend of mine. And he was like, I just bought a movie studio. And I was like, wait, what? And he was like an investor and stuff, and like a successful businessman. And he was like, yeah, I bought it with a stipulation that I can't mess too much with the structure, because it was the first movie studio in Los Angeles. I think it was actually technically, there was one in New Jersey. The business started in New Jersey, but then because of the winters, they started it out here. So those nerds that are listening could Google, it's Max Sennett Studios. And it was where all those pie in the face scenes were done. Mm-hmm. And he walked me in, and he was like, I got a private tour. He's like, come to the basement. And there was like, he was like, Charlie Chaplin worked here as a stagehand before he made it. And there was cigarettes on the ground from 1920. He couldn't touch anything because it was an archaeological thing. And it was just really, really cool to me. And I just think, like, when I was a kid, I grew up in like Southern California, and like our house was an old farm building. And I always had this feeling as a kid, I'm like, I've lived in Los Angeles before, I've lived in Hollywood before, and I did that in the 20s, and I'll have flashbacks and remember Victorian houses. I remember it like it was yesterday. And I'm like, oh, I came back again in 1980. But like, I love not even 40s and 50s Hollywood, but like when it was just starting, and the pictures and the glamour and the
whole... Like that show, the Ryan Murphy show, yes, Hollywood?
Yes. Yeah. Even like maybe 10 or 20 years before that show, that was supposed to be like... But 1920s Hollywood, it was incredible. It's a fucking shithole over here now. And mm-hmm. It breaks my heart to say that as an Angeleno, but Hollywood is just a fucking shithole. But like before, you would see pictures and it was just people mm-hmm. in suits. It was a big deal and mm-hmm. a little more classy.
Can you guess what mine is?
Let me guess. Hold on. Either 70s Coke parties or hold on. France in the 50s.
That's cute. 1980s New York.
That sounds
like
fun.
Wall Street era.
That sounds fun.
Like, yeah, that I would love, like big limos with big phones and like parties yeah. and mounds of coke and like American Psycho, like mm-hmm. you know, all that kind of music. And that like, just
look,
seems
a CD player, you know,
that like Discman, yeah, you know? That just seems like such a fun time.
That would seem like
a
fun
time, party time, clubbing in the 80s with yeah. yeah.
Your dad has some memories about
totally.
It.
Totally. Okay. I don't understand this question. Why y'all sweet and sour sauce vampires? Next question.
That's a tricky question.
That's a tricky question, John.
I'll dip out of that one.
Jenna asked Steven, who do you think killed Elena from The Undoing? We know that.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a question just for you. Will you be continuing So Deep?
I'm not sure. You know, guys, I got to be, and gals, and everybody, I have to be real honest. I this is the truth. As entertainers, we fucking hemorrhage, and that's a victim mentality, hemorrhage, but we put out so much energy and you know, I just turned 40. I'm picking and choosing. I'm realizing how valuable my time is. And my podcast was growing and growing. People loved it, but I didn't see a return on it. I wasn't really getting paid for it. Mm-hmm. I could hustle and like, you know, like you do, you're making money now. And I could do that, but I'm like, where do I want, you only have so many good hours in the day, especially if you're an entertainer. So I you know, you have like probably everybody's different. We're pretty motivated and pretty energetic. I got four or five good hours in the day. Do I want to stop? Go hustle. What guests can I get? Go drive over to their place. Them come over mine. I have someone producing my podcast, putting all this, and it's not giving me a return, where I just started a payments company and it's making money. So like the comedy store like asked me the other day, I'm doing jujitsu now. And it was like this real defining moment where a friend from the comedy store says, hey, do you want to come and do a show in the belly room? It's getting projected out onto the fucking patio of the comedy store. There's going to be no one in there, maybe a few people on the patio. And I thought, I'd rather go work out and do jiu-jitsu tonight. And I don't want to do a show for a few people. I don't want to use my time like that. So the long answer to the short question is, I don't know if I'm going to be doing So Deep anymore. I might if I feel inspired to, but I really want to... our relationship is great because whatever I put into it, I get back, and there's like a mutual, like we give each other push, you know, give and take. But like, I don't want to do anything artistically where I'm not getting anything back anymore. Those days are like driving to a bar show, or I'm just kind of like, I'd rather sell credit card processing, make money. I'd rather write my own script to get on television to, you know, to put it out there globally. So mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know if I'm gonna continue or not. It's got to be on different terms, and I've got to get something back in that relationship.
I think every career has a grind, and what this pandemic has really kind of showed us is what grind are you comfortable with? Mm-hmm. Because before this, we hoard ourselves out. We put ourselves through hell, you know, and worked ourselves tirelessly, and now, you know, that we're spending our energy in a different way. Like, what feels good to you?
It doesn't feel good for me to drive out to 45 minutes away to do eight minutes at a bar.
Totally.
That's just not worth it. That's not a good investment of my time. Yeah. It's not worth it. I'm past that. And so I like when I go with Josh Wolf, dude, nice hotels, we're having fun, I'm doing 25 minutes. That's a good use of, yeah, I'll go out there, make some new fans and entertain people and see another part of the country. But like, I'm really, picking and choosing now how I'm spending my time, and everybody's just not getting the Steve Randolph show for free anymore.
Mm-hmm. I like that. And I think that's the next level of personal success, you know?
Well, to bring him up again, Brody's old manager, Dave Rath, I was at the Comedy Store with him, and they were like, Randolph, you're on next. And I just didn't want to perform that night. And I said, I know that everybody wants to perform here, sold out show. And I go, I don't feel like it tonight. And he goes, you're a professional. Professionals say if and when they're going to perform.
Mm-hmm.
Amateurs have to perform. And I was like, bingo. And I just said no.
Yeah. Here's the next part to that question from the same person.
I'm getting sick of their shit, but
if not continuing So Deep, what is your next venture? Much love from me. He inspired me to get sober.
Wow. Thank you. I'm glad to inspire to get sober. It's the best thing that ever happened to me. And you know, that's awesome. My next venture, I'm writing my own show, and I'm building out a payments company, Aqua Payments. That's www.aqua-payments. I focus on anybody who can't use Square, Stripe, or PayPal. So high risk CBD companies, weed companies.
You're a high risk credit card processor.
Yeah.
Can you explain to our listeners in layman terms what credit card processing is?
Anytime you go online, I focus on online. So anytime you go online and buy something, for transacting that, there's a service fee, like a processing fee, you know, whether it's $2 or $3 or $1. That's what I do. I provide the ability for online companies to take payment from their customers if they don't want to use PayPal or Square or something like that. And a lot of those, the people that I service, the businesses that I service, cannot use Square or PayPal, you know?
So you are the middleman between the company and the banks.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I do. Yeah. And, so that's what for my next thing is, I'm going to focus on this payments business. My Martin Martins, that's the thing that I have a secret project that I'm building out right now that I can't tell anybody. I'm building out a fake world, kind of like Sacha Baron Cohen does. I'm building out a fake world with another one of my characters, and it's growing faster than anything I'm doing, but I have a team around it, and it's kind of feel weird about it. It's kind of getting a little crazy, but I have that going for fun. And then Martin Martins, you know, I'm writing a scripted half-hour show with my buddy Kyle Anderson. So I'm really focused on that. I want to get on television and movies. And
when you say get on, you mean you want to act in?
Act in, create, produce, mm-hmm. and be a part of film and television, mm-hmm. you know? And to me, you know, Jim Carrey came to the Comedy Store and they said, hey, why don't you do stand-up anymore? And he goes, I want to perform in front of 4 million, not 400. I want to be more global, and I want to be on film and television, come in and drop in at comedy clubs like Nick Kroll does. And so, oh my God, so-and-so's from my favorite shows here. And they come in and do 20 minutes and go home. That's what I want to focus on. And so building my own characters and creating television shows around them and movies around them is what I'm most passionate about. And that's what I'm really focused on right now.
I love that. Yeah. It's cool. You know, we've talked about this, you and me kind of feel the same way about entertainment and performing right now. And, you know, I've talked about this 1,000 times on my podcast already since the pandemic has happened, kind of the clarity that I've gotten, which is, you know, I still like stand up. I will still perform when I feel like I want to, but that nightly grind, that, you know, that desperation that I had of wanting to,
I don't need anybody's validation anymore.
That grind, it was unbearable at times with stand up, and it's such hard work. No one can just become.
It's the hardest thing in the
people
world.
People think you can just get on stage and do stand up. You have to.
My
commit.
Friend from work's funny. You know,
it's you like, are committing your entire life on a nightly basis for years and years and years, for 10 years, and you know, I really enjoyed my time while I did it, but it also at the same time, there was also a lot of pain and suffering that went along with that.
A ton for me personally.
And you know, when I went on the road and opened up for people like Joey Diaz, Bobby Lee, Josh Wolfe, you know, that was super fun. When you're going away for the weekend and you're traveling, you're staying in great hotels, you're doing 5 shows in a weekend and the crowds are fantastic. And that's a super fun experience.
When you're in the main room, when you got, you know, an outside producer's producing a sold out 400 person show in the main room, you got 10 minutes right in the middle of a hot show. That's amazing. But to cold open, I just got, you know, the spots that I was getting, it's just not worth my time. I don't want to do 5 minute cold open on a Friday night show. I'm done doing that shit.
Yeah, the short amount of spots, the traveling, the sweating, the fucking grind, like it's just a lot. And you know, and so I'm putting a pause on that. You know, I did perform a couple weeks ago, and I, you know, did 25 minutes and I hosted a show and it, you know, it was fun, but I really am preferring and enjoying writing more, which is, and when I say writing, I'm talking about working on features and pilots, and you know, I'm trying to create my own TV shows. I'm trying to write feature films that I can sell.
Chelsea, let me cut in and just tell you, this is what I noticed, and a lot of my friends or people outside the business don't know this, and this is the cold facts. There are some of, you know, I could just think of, I don't even want to name names, but there is some of the funniest people in the world that I've ever seen at the Comedy Store, right? And they are just the best stand-ups I've ever seen in my life, but they're not on film and television, so like they don't really fill rooms, and they're just, you know, and I notice all of a sudden I'd be sitting there and so-and-so, you know, we're all fighting for stage time. It's a packed, sold-out show, and so-and-so from some TV show I'd never even heard of happens to come in a luxury car, and everybody's like, oh my God, so-and-so's here from Waka Waka fucking, oh fuck. I just spilled coffee all over the fucking couch. Fuck. Is this a sign?
Of what? Just put the glass on the side table, first of all.
Yes, Mom.
We'll clean it up after, I guess. Oh, here's some toilet paper on the ground.
Okay. So then people that were in film and television would come in, they would bump every single comic there, and then they would just get on and get a sweet spot, get back in their luxury car and leave. And I'm like, I want that. They weren't necessarily better than the people doing at all, better than the people doing stand up, but film and television goes a long way. And in my pursuits of film and television, where that's where really where my heart is, I believe that I'll be then able to go to fill up a room in Phoenix. Hey, Steve from the Martin Martin show is on. Oh my God, let's go see him. I didn't know he did stand up. That's what I want
to
do.
For me, it has nothing to do with the future of my, you know, performing with stand up. It has to do with what I genuinely enjoy, because I worked on a new script for 5 months, and I worked on it every single day for 5 months. I would wake up 8 o'clock. I would sit in front of my computer, you know, 8:30, and I would write all day long until 5 p.m. until I was brain dead. And I loved it. I loved it. And like, I just found it so much more enjoyable to be projecting my energy into that. That's what I wanted to do. It made me feel good. Like, you know, I like that. And it's funny, we were talking about, you know, I finished that project and right now I am in between ideas and I want to start my next thing. You know, I'm focusing on being a writer right now, 100%. And so I'm, writer's right. Let's get started on the next idea. And, there is this anxious in between stage where you're trying to figure out what the next idea is that you're going with. And it can be a very, you know, I tend to feel very lost. I feel, you know, not good enough. I'm comparing myself to others. I'm not focused. I'm searching for the next thing to get me excited. And it's a very uncomfortable stage. And if anyone is a writer or can relate, I just came up with this thing yesterday that I like, and I'm reframing it as the inspiration stage. The inspiration stage is where I'm writing, I'm reading, I'm watching things, I'm getting inspired, I'm living life. I'm not in between lost and in the unknown. I'm in the process. It's like I have to put a task around, like the idea of it being a task, to feel comfortable. So I'm not on shaky ground because I'm in the process of getting inspired. I have to like reframe things, because if I'm not like on some sort of personal task, then I don't feel good and it's an uncomfortable feeling.
What's the next question?
The next question is this, baby. I'm newly separated from an alcoholic and started to date another alcoholic. What do I do?
Go to a 12-step program for people that are obsessed with alcoholics.
Which is called Al-Anon.
We don't break anonymity on this.
We're not
podcast.
Breaking anonymity. I'm letting someone know what kind of program exists.
I would say message me privately and I'll share that information with you. Okay. There's a...
Is there an also... I would say to that, I would also say if you're noticing that you're going after a certain type of person, yes, I would look into that program. And I would also say, what is it about alcoholics? Alcoholics are checked out people. Alcoholics are not present. Are you afraid of being intimate? Are you afraid of being seen? What is it about these types of people? Are you wanting to be pushed to the side? Alcoholics aren't caring, focused on you people. They're not good people to be in relationships with.
Sober or not sober?
Not sober.
Okay.
Not sober to me, it's you're being with someone who you don't...
Sober
you don't,
alcoholics are great.
Yeah, but I'm saying if you're with someone who is an active alcoholic, you know, you're not going to... It's like a different relationship.
Yeah, fear of someone who's available.
Yeah.
It's easy.
Yeah, so...
They're broken and it's never your fault.
Yeah, so why do you want to be fixing someone or taking care of someone, or why don't you want to be seen by someone? That's what I would say.
And also when you date fucked up people, it's a really... It's a drug in and of itself trying to fix them, because then you never get to look at in your own. It's a distraction. You know, it's mm-hmm. it's an avoidance of yourself.
Totally. And maybe it's a repetition of your childhood.
Historical.
You know, historical. It's you grew up in chaos. So being with someone who's an alcoholic, there's always chaos. There's always drama. You're just repeating where you're comfortable. When you're in a normal, healthy relationship, there's stability, and that can create an uncomfortable feeling. You know, you're stability waiting for boredom. The other shoe to drop. You're bored. You don't feel good enough. You're, why is this person mm-hmm. with me? So it's a lot of stuff to look at there.
Yeah.
Next question is Stephen Ticklish. Haha. I love that he has a foot fetish.
Yes, I am.
Where are you ticklish?
I mean, you just have to get me.
Where? Tell me.
Like armpits.
Yeah.
Or like feet.
If someone tickles my feet, I'm going to kill them.
My dad was ticklish in his feet. Mm-hmm. And I remember when we were growing up, he was laying in bed sleeping, and I was like 6, and I woke up in the middle of the night and I saw his leg sticking out, and I went over and tickled it, and he kicked me in my chest across
oh my
the
God.
Room in his sleep. And I just stood there like, oh my God, you know, and then just went back
he
to
was
my
a
dad.
Horse.
Yeah, he was a horse.
Okay, we got our last question. Do you ever get sick of each other and need space? How do you handle it? LOL.
Do you want to go first?
Do we ever get sick of each other? Yes, we do get sick of each other. I think Steven gets sick of me more than I get sick of him. And how we do handle it is that we take space. And, you know, especially during these times when we're constantly with each other, I think we make a point to really keep an independent life during the day and to be focused on our own things. You know, like I went to the dog park today. I went on a walk by myself, going on walks by myself, or sitting down to write or do my own work. Steven moved his desk into the bedroom a couple months in, and that really solved a lot of our issues to baseline to begin with. And he's in there all day working. I'm out in the kitchen working at the table. And then, you know, when it's dinner time, I will make dinner. We will have dinner. We'll sit down and we'll watch a TV show. And that's kind of how we've been living. So when we keep our own personal things during the day and come together at night, that's what's working for us.
I'm finding that, like, it's not so much sick of Chelsea as needing my own space. And I think as guys, we're kind of like this. It's as a guy, like, we're living in a one bedroom. We're constantly home. And
I'm making notes about what we talked about from my description.
Oh, okay. It's distracting.
Sorry.
I'll wait. I just need to see that was a boundary right there that didn't make me feel good. And I just shared about it. I think men too, women a lot of times don't understand men. We need to go out of the cave and we need to like be on our own for a little bit. And it has nothing to do. So I don't get sick of Chelsea, but I need private space sometimes, whether that's going outside. I found that jiu-jitsu is really helping me, and I'm doing jiu-jitsu with my childhood friend from high school, and it's really fun. I miss guy time. That's the one thing that I identified in the last 6 months. I need to be around other men just doing manly things, and you know, rather than just hang out with my wife all day and watch reality shows and stuff, which I love. I have a feminine side too, but I was like missing like wrestling with guys and like going and hanging out. And Chelsea still thinks I'm gay, and this didn't help at all. But I once a month, I haven't in a while, but go to a hotel by myself and just spend the day reflecting with a journal and stuff. And Chelsea thinks that I have an alternate life out there doing that.
No, I don't. She doesn't. My mom like did.
It. Your mom did. Yeah, I just told Chelsea, I'm going to go with a bunch of guys to Two Bunch Palms, you know, for a guys' weekend. You're like, no, I want to go.
Well, I love Two Bunch Palms. It's a nice place. I want to go.
Yeah, but if you said the same thing, or you're like, I want to go with my girlfriends to this hotel, I'd be like, oh my God, that's so awesome. You're having girlfriend time.
Yeah, I mean, I hang out with my girlfriends all the time. I do make a point to make plans with my girlfriends, you know, 1, 2, 3 times a week. And that really helps me. Tomorrow I'm going to go to my friend Julie's and hang out and stuff. And just like making sure we're, you know, taking time to do stuff outside of the relationship.
Having your own life. Having your own life outside of the relationship is really, Chelsea and I are very codependent. And, you know, we work together at the Comedy Store. We live together. We were around each other 24 hours a day. So I think in order to keep things fun and exciting, it is important to have like time outside of the relationship on your own with other people, you know, mm-hmm. other people and other outside interests. So I've been exploring those. So I jiu-jitsu, going on walks, you know, having some alone time is very important.
Totally. And we go to our own meetings and stuff.
Yeah.
And yeah. All right. Well, that was it for the questions. Anything else to add or?
No, just that if you need credit card processing and you're finding that Square and PayPal and Stripe aren't the companies you thought they were, I could sure help you. DM me. I'm on Instagram at Aqua Payments, and just send me a DM. If you know anybody that has a weed business, a CBD business, adult, nutraceutical, I'll help you.
And what is your favorite dish of mine?
Korean barbecue.
Korean barbecue?
Yeah.
I mean, can you talk about me as a chef?
Yeah. I feel like you're mad right now.
No.
You got mad that I told you not to text.
Whatever.
Okay. I felt like the energy change after that.
Did it?
Yeah. You just kind of like went down. Chelsea is one of the best chefs I've ever.
And it's going back up.
Second to my mom and my sister and my aunt.
That's
Flo,
a lie.
And to my aunt.
I'm
Flo.
The first. You don't have a Flo.
I know.
Am I the first?
Chelsea's.
Am I your favorite chef?
Chelsea's my favorite chef. Chelsea's incredible. She could go to a restaurant and just replicate it like instantly. And so in quarantine, she really upped her game. And so we went to Korean barbecue. I'm like, there's no way you can do Korean barbecue at home. She makes the sauce. She does everything. Her cooking is the best I've ever had in my life. She's the best chef I know. Honestly, I really mean that with the bottom of my heart. You're the best chef I've ever met.
My love.
Yeah, you're the best chef. You have a incredible skill set. And your writing's incredible too. Your writing's top notch. I think the two strongest artistic things you have going are your writing, or three, writing, directing, and cooking. I think those are your three.
Thank you, my love.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I love
you. Yeah, your cooking's out of control. I love you too.
Thank you.
I'm glad I
married
you.
You look so handsome.
I'm getting chubby.
No, you look actually toned and muscular.
Okay.
So it doesn't look chubby.
Okay.
And yeah, that's it for the episode, guys. Also, I want to give a quick little shout out to two businesses. that are friends of mine. One is Sunday Scaries, which is a CBD company.
I'm wearing their hat.
You're wearing the hat that we got from them. And I really like their CBD. It has no THC in it, which is great for me since I'm sober. And I like to take the gummies at night and it just knocks me the fuck out. And it's and they're super, I don't know, they're just like chill and relaxing. And
she
I
knocks
like them
out right away.
Yeah. And so I've been taking these Sunday Scaries gummies. Check them out, Sunday Scaries CBD on Instagram. And if you want to get something, you can use my code Chelsea20 for 20% off all items on their website, SundayScaries.com. So definitely check that out if you're looking for a good CBD company. Again, I love them because they are no THC, you know, which is really important for me since I'm sober. So those are great. And then also, I'm not sponsored by them, but I want to point out that I was sent some all natural deodorant by a company called Piper Y. I did a 14-day detox of using their clean, natural charcoal deodorant. I had been using regular deodorant my whole life. When I say regular, I'm talking about
men's deodorant.
I use men's deodorant because I sweat. I have a sweating problem. I started using this Piper Y because they sent me some, and I will continue buying this brand. It smells like eucalyptus, like a spa. You just rub it onto your underarm area and it has helped me so much. I took a shower last night and I sweat sometimes when I sleep because, you know, I sleep hot. And when I woke up, I forgot to put on deodorant last night after my shower. I didn't smell at all this morning. And like usually if I shower and I don't put on deodorant, like I kind of have a little BO in the morning. I had zero BO. I didn't smell like anything.
I like BO.
And I think it's
women.
Detoxing, you know, from my body. And it's really cool. So check out Piper Y, PiperWai, if you're looking for an all natural deodorant. I really like it. And I had a fear around all natural deodorant that it would make me smell worse, but it's actually the opposite and it's really nice. So check out Piper Y and Sunday Scaries. Those are two companies that I'm really loving and want to share with you guys.
Oh, also, I'm not affiliated with them in any way, but I just love comedy. Food, because I used to work for Big Brother magazine, so that was such a fun, funny magazine that later became Jackass. My favorite Instagram page, Foo's Gone Wild. You'll only understand it if you're from Southern California or you live with a lot of Latinos. Like, it's just like, it's like Hispanic humor. It's the funniest thing since Big Brother magazine. FOOS Gone Wild. Like a Foo is like a cholo. Like it's Theo Von's on it sometimes. It's just the funniest Instagram account. If you want to see what it's like growing up in LA, Foo's Gone Wild, funniest dudes, look at it closely. It's my fault, huh?
Thank you guys so much for listening to today's episode. Check out Steven on Instagram at StevenRandolph214.
At StevenRandolph2.
Oh, shit. Sorry.
Look at it closely.
Too, and at Chelsea Skidmore on Instagram. Follow us. And also, please remember to subscribe, rate, and review to the podcast, The Chelsea Skidmore Show. If you guys want to donate, you know, you like the episode, want to shoot me some money, message me on Instagram. I'll get you the details for that. We always love to get, you know, a little bit of support from you guys. So thank you so much for listening and have a great night.
Look at it closely.
Bye.